So you think you might be going through the discard, or you just went through the discard, or you're going through it now. I'm going to help you out, and I'm going to share with you some of the mistakes that I made when I went through the narcissistic discard and exactly how you can avoid them and do a little better than I did when you end your relationship with a narcissist. So let's get started.
Closed captioning provided by Athena Moberg and CPTSDFoundation.org.
My name is Angie Atkinson, and on this channel I offer free daily video coaching to help you discover, understand, and overcome narcissistic abuse and toxic relationships. I like to call it toxic relationship rehab. So if that sounds good to you, hit that subscribe button and let's get going.
The day I met my ex-husband. That day I was trying to get my friend hooked up with this guy who I thought was more her type than mine. And unfortunately, he seemed more interested in my number than hers. I wouldn't give him mine, but he gave me his, and after a few days, I just threw it away. Well, then I found out that my friend had seen him out in the bars and he was asking where I was, and then my friend said that she had promised him she would bring me with her next time she came out. Well, against my better judgment, I went out and met with this guy who 5 months later I would find myself married to. Speaking of that, when we did get married 5 months later, I remember standing at the altar, staring at him, staring at the minister, staring at all the other people in the room, and freaking the heck out. Inside my head, I was just screaming, "No!" But somehow I pushed through, I thought, for the better. At the time, I was proud of myself for pushing through. Now, it turns out that was a terrible idea. I remember how proud I felt of myself. Ooh, I got over those cold feet, etc. But what it all came down to is that really wasn't cold feet so much as it was intuition, in my opinion, in hindsight. But 4 days after I got married, I found out I was pregnant with my oldest child. Long story short, he turned out to be a narcissist. The end of the relationship, I had just gone through several bad events with him, and then there was a straw that broke the camel's back. It was related to my child. I was done at this point. I had been sort of talking with my parents, who I was still in contact with at the time, about what I was dealing with my ex, and they had told me, when you're ready, let us know and we'll get you out of there, but when you're ready, you better really be ready, because once we help you, that's it, you're not going back. And even though they didn't really have the right to control my life, I didn't really understand that all the way at the time. So I knew in my head that the very minute that I was ready to leave and I made that phone call and I said, okay, let's do this, that it was over. So I waited as long as I could, but then I could wait no more. The problem was that I told them, and then they said, okay, well, we can get everybody together 2 weeks from now. So deal with it for 2 more weeks, and then one day he'll go to work, we'll come get you and all your stuff, and you'll just be gone. Well, that seemed like a great idea. But a week later, I was sitting watching Oprah with my ex-husband on the couch, and Oprah was talking about broken marriages, relationships that didn't work. And as she's talking, as her experts are talking, I just burst into tears. Well, my ex-husband says to me,
"What's wrong, honey? Are you okay?"
Well, I wasn't okay because I was sick to my stomach with the idea that I was leaving him that following week. So I ended up telling him that I was going to leave, and he begged me not to go, and I said I had to go. I explained how I had told my parents, and I said that if he would straighten up his stuff and get himself together within 3 months, that I would come back. And he agreed. He seemed so suddenly empathetic. Suddenly, from that moment until the very moment that I left that house, for the next week, he was the perfect husband. I doubted my decision from that moment on, but there was no turning back. And so even though I didn't identify this as hoovering behavior at the time, this is what hoovering behavior looked like for him. He found out I was leaving, and suddenly he became the perfect husband. Despite the fact that I was sick to my stomach, that I was crying, that I was doubting myself, I ended up leaving anyway, as I said, because I felt obligated to do so. I remember the day they pulled up to pick me up. He was just leaving for work. I had kissed him goodbye and hugged him and held him tightly. My family seemed a little confused by this behavior, understandably, and I seriously regretted it. I was crying, and I almost felt like somebody was doing this to me by me leaving. Again, I had made the choice to leave. I knew I was doing the right thing when I did it, but because suddenly he had been this perfect husband for the following 7 days, I was doubting myself. I was regretting my decision while I was making the decision. And then the only thing that comforted me for the next few weeks was talking to him on the phone or even going to visit him, which I did a few times. We pretended that we were back together a little bit. We played house, but we never really got back together. And in this case, because I had sort of made a promise to myself and other people in my life that I couldn't go back, even though part of me wanted to go back, I didn't go back. And today I look back and I'm so, so grateful that I didn't do that. So we're going to talk about the mistakes that I made leaving my narcissist that you can either avoid or maybe identify with and help other survivors avoid as we go forward. So let's talk about that. Mistake number one for me was counting on someone else to help me. And what I mean by that is not so much the physical moving part, but counting on someone else's iron will to help me. Because in this case, I was counting on someone else who was trying to control my life. And that person would continue to control my life in different ways for several years after the day that I left this person. Mistake number two was that I doubted myself. But I doubted myself because of mistake number three, which was telling him a week before I left that I was leaving. Why was that a mistake? He did help me pack the stuff, which was nice. But outside of that, I gave him an opportunity to remind me why I got with him in the first place. I gave him an opportunity to show me that he could change. I gave him an opportunity to hoover me, for lack of a better word. I know a lot of you are asking yourselves, well, how do you know he didn't really change and you didn't miss out, right? Well, I happen to be really lucky here because I've actually gotten a chance to speak with two of his following three wives, because of the third one I think he's still married to after me. So I was wife number one. I got a chance to talk to wife two and wife three, and now he's married to wife four, who I have never spoken to. Wife two and three both told me that his behavior during their relationships was pretty much identical to his relationship with me. And that included all the different forms of abuse and neglect that he was so famous for doling out. If I knew then what I know now, I would have done one thing differently. I want to say number one is not allow anyone to affect my decision, but the fact is that maybe I needed that at that moment in my life. But the true mistake that I made of all the other mistakes was telling this person in advance that I was leaving.
So when you're dealing with narcissists and making the mistakes that we all make with narcissists, how do you keep yourself kind of safe during the discard? How do you ensure your emotional safety and keep yourself as safe as possible during the discard? Well, you have to start by setting boundaries. Take a look.
First of all, we have to recognize that these things are going to be a little bit uncomfortable. Setting boundaries is going to be uncomfortable for us because we started off not doing that. A lot of us have been people pleasers. A lot of us have spent our whole lives feeling like, what if somebody doesn't like the choice I make? I think when we're setting our boundaries, we have to stop caring what other people think. We don't have to be a huge jerk about it, though. What we have to do is we have to decide within ourselves, separately and independently of other people, these are the things that I will tolerate and these are the things that I will not tolerate. For example, in a relationship. In my relationship, the deal is you don't hit me or abuse me in any way, mentally, physically, or otherwise. You don't hurt my children in any way, and you don't cheat on me. Those three things, I walk away, no discussion. You know what you did. Anything else we can talk about and try to get through. I'm not saying that I will tolerate anything else. I'm just saying those three things are definitely deal breakers for me. How did I set those boundaries? I made it very clear to my husband when I first met him many years ago that this is what the deal was and these were my deal breakers. He also made clear his deal breakers, which conveniently enough were the same as mine. So that worked out really well for both of us. How do you practice setting boundaries? Start small. Start with someone in your life who is maybe a little kinder to you or a stranger. You know what I mean? Start with someone who isn't as important or significant to you if necessary. For example, if you have a job and your boss says, hey, can you work on Saturday? But you've already made plans to go out of town on Saturday and your boss knew it. And you can say, well, you know, I'm going out of town tomorrow night, Friday night, whatever, and I won't be back until Monday. So unfortunately, I can't work on Saturday. Or maybe you could say, or I can't work on Saturday in the office, but I can dial in from wherever I'm going to be if necessary. You know what I mean? But set your boundaries, whatever those are, one at a time. And when it comes to relationships, it's about the deal breaker factor. So let me ask you a question. Have you ever thought about the boundaries that you had for yourself and your life before you met the narcissist versus the ones you have right now or that you had during the relationship? Wait a minute. Before you answer that, let me clarify something. I'm not talking about the fun or silly, OMG, I'll never wear bell bottoms kind of boundary. Because let me tell you something. I had that one. I crossed it. Can't wait to do it again, y'all. Love bell bottoms. Anyway, I'm talking about the serious, intrinsic, deep down in your gut, gotta stick to it or your tummy's gonna hurt kind of boundaries. So let me ask you, have your personal boundaries, your personal basic standards been changed or altered as a result of a relationship with a toxic narcissist? While we're asking questions, if you're unfortunate enough to have had a narcissistic parental figure in your life, or you've been in a relationship longer than you should, do you really even know what your personal boundaries are, or have they been defined for you by someone else? Narcissists have a way of always pushing our boundaries, sometimes even as a way to amuse themselves. Yeah, I'm not kidding, and that's not an exaggeration. I've been told by more than one narcissist that they just like to mess with people, or that they intentionally start drama just to see what people are going to do about it. They think it's funny, but sometimes their agenda is so much more calculated than just to amuse myself. And that's when you have to be especially cautious. That's because when it comes to dealing with a narcissist on the regular, you've got to recognize that a certain amount of conditioning happens to each and every one of us. And even, and maybe especially to those of us who are very intelligent. You might find yourself in a panic if you have to stand up for yourself or say no to someone. And you might even have physical symptoms that include dry mouth, dissociation, you know, where you get kind of confused and foggy. And you might even feel dizzy, nauseous, or just plain old anxious. And of course, this is exactly what the narcissist wants, right? Because it allows the narcissist to remain in control of the situation and ultimately in control of you. The narcissist knows that if they nag you, discredit you, and or the boundary that they're crossing is repeatedly crossed, you will eventually get tired of fighting and you'll just let it go, as in accept it, or at least not require the narcissist to continue to justify it or discuss it. This allows the cycle, the toxic cycle, to repeat and continue. What does this cycle look like in real life? Let's use this fictitious situation as an example. Let me tell you a story. So we've got a fictitious couple. We're going to call them Ned the narcissist and Emily the empath. Emily is Ned's semi-willing victim. They made a deal at the beginning of their relationship that neither one of them would have friends of the opposite sex, not close friends anyway. This deal was made at the request of Ned.
Emily was happy to comply, letting go of several close male friends in order to secure her place in Ned's fickle heart. Years later, when Ned suddenly begins new friendships with ladies at his office and then within the couple's shared social circles, it certainly didn't sit well with Emily, who has consistently up to this point avoided friendships with the opposite sex since the boundary was set by Ned in the beginning. Obviously, Emily raises concerns, and Ned tells her she's being paranoid, she's got nothing to worry about, but then maybe he, Ned, does, because clearly Emily doesn't blindly trust him.
And you know, a narcissist needs his victims or her victims to blindly trust them. If the victim doesn't blindly trust the narcissist, well, the narcissist will do everything they can, everything in their power to break you until you do blindly trust them, or at least you pretend to. Instead of attempting to soothe Emily's fears, Ned plays them up. Ned makes Emily feel worthless in this relationship, and this continued manipulation and gaslighting makes Emily afraid of asking questions about any of Ned's choices ever, because if she does, he might unleash a fury on her that only a narcissist can. Narcissistic injury, narcissistic rage, or both. Let me break this down for you. Ned the narcissist oversteps Emily's boundaries. Emily complains, resists, or refuses. Ned pushes, pleads, prods, discredits, and pressures until Emily says something like, "Fine, you can have female friends, but I better never find you hanging out with one alone." So this causes Emily to redefine her boundary, but hours, weeks, days, whatever, later, when Emily catches Ned hanging out with some other girl, she confronts him again, reminding him of the previously crossed and redefined boundary. And of course, rinse and repeat, the same cycle starts all over again. He's like, "Why don't you blindly trust me?" And she's like, "Because you said this and now you're doing this." So what can you do if you're in a relationship with a boundary-busting narcissist? I suggest you try the Grey Rock Rule, of course, is where you don't give the narcissist any of your energy of the emotional nature. Deciding what your core values are. What is your comfort level? Are you comfortable discussing your personal finances with other people? Do you enjoy it when your friends and family just show up, or does it annoy the crap out of you? You need a little warning. I like a little warning myself. Are you willing to let other people borrow your car, borrow money, borrow a cup of sugar? How much honesty do you want to give and receive in your relationships? These are all questions that you should ask yourself when you're trying to set boundaries. Some of these values are going to vary depending on the other person involved in the situation. Like, you might let your best friend borrow your car, but no one else. Certain people might be able to spend time, you know, with you, like spending the night on the couch, while other people can't. You have to determine what you need in each relationship, communicate your needs to the other person as appropriate, and it's going to require a certain amount of assertiveness. The next thing you want to do is determine the consequences. How are you going to handle it if someone violates your boundaries? Remind other people of what the boundaries are and then take action. If someone shows up unannounced, don't let them into your home. If they're late, they could go somewhere else. You know, if that's a boundary that you want to set. You have to be consistent. It's natural for people to test your boundaries even when they're not narcissists. This is especially true with children and other people in general. It's important that you're consistent, otherwise nobody's going to take you seriously. So follow through and keep your word.
And then you have to consider your perception. Take a look. I want you guys to flow instead of fight. And what I mean is, if you were constantly focused on fighting, I gotta fight this. I'm a warrior. I'm strong. Okay, strong is good. Fighting and warrior, it lends to the idea that you will always have to fight. So instead of that, say, I'm flowing toward peace. I'm flowing into my power. I'm flowing into my, I like power better than powerful, fearless, those kinds of things. Yes, fighting and warrior, those kinds of things bring more reasons to fight and be a warrior into your life. So instead of fighting, I want you to flow. Flow into your truth. Flow into the life that you want. It's so much easier to flow than it is to fight. You feel me? And you don't want reasons to fight in your life. You want reasons to be happy, to be whole, to be full. So flow, my friends, flow.
So just a quick refresher on the law of attraction. It's the same concept they talk about in the book, The Secret, the book, The Power, the movie, The Secret. Basically, what happens is that whatever you're thinking about and focused on, you get more of that in your life. In a nutshell. So if you are constantly finding things to be grateful for, more reasons to be grateful pop into your life. If you're constantly fighting against something, more reasons to fight come into your life.
When you try to fight something, you're still thinking about that thing. If you want to attract better things into your life, instead of thinking about fighting it, think about just being happy, just feeling better, just feeling good. Here's the thing, my friend. I've been saying this for years, and I certainly don't mean to nag, but please, just take a second and really focus on this next sentence. You don't have to accept someone else's judgment, perception, or opinion of you. You get to write your own story. You choose who you are and how you perceive yourself. Let me say it one more time. You get to write your own story. The fact is that you can be whoever and whatever you want. All you have to do is believe that you can. I mean, really believe it. Feel it down to your bones. And then believe that you're receiving it, that you've already received it. Own it because it's yours if you want it. Today, I challenge you to take a look at the people around you. Those you love, those you like, and even those who present certain struggles for you. Remember your childhood and the people who you spent time with during that time. Now, think of all the perceptions that they had about you, your parents, your friends, others. Then I want you to think about you. Have you adopted someone else's opinions of who you are? Or have you constantly struggled against it? Do you feel guilty for being who you are because you haven't become what someone else expected you to become or wanted you to become? Most of us can identify with this feeling on some level, I suspect, but most especially those who have been negatively affected by a narcissist's gaslighting and abuse in relationships. This next part is the hardest part of all, so I hope you're sitting down. It's finally time to let go of every disapproving look, veiled insult, and rude comment. Let go of disapproving looks and veiled insults that go along with gaslighting, especially from a narcissist, obviously. It's time to wash away the well-intentioned but misguided attempts to save your soul, your sense of fashion, and your sense of justice. You're going to release those attempts that were directed at changing yourself to fit someone else's idea of perfect. I know what you're thinking, probably something along the lines of, oh yeah, sure, and how would you propose I go about that? Well, you know me, I've got an answer, and if you know me well, you know that it works, because it's exactly how I survived my own narcissistic abuse situation. Try this. Today, every time you have a negative thought, whether it's about yourself or someone else, especially about yourself, take notice and change your mind. I want you to cancel the thought and intentionally replace it with an affirmation of your true desires. If you think to yourself, you know what? I'm always late. Notice it and then mentally cancel that thought. And then, you know, I want you to affirm, I'm always on time. You see what I mean? So you're going to cancel it and come up with something more positive. Perception is everything, my friend, and you can change yours at will. It's good stuff, right? The trick is in what one emphasizes. We either make ourselves miserable or we make ourselves strong. The amount of work is the same. This is one of those things that works, changing your perception intentionally. And with a little practice, not only will you see results fast, but you'll soon realize how much control you really do have in your own life. And do what you need to do. Think about what you're grateful for. When you are going through these moments, these painful moments where you're trying to figure it all out, this is the time that you've got to sit down with your notebook and your pen and write down 10 things you're grateful for and 3 things you love about yourself. In the morning, in the evening, and any other time you feel just like that, you should do it. This is the time when you most need to change your vibration.
So if you created an intention and you did all the right steps and you opened your heart energy to it, you wanted it to be the right thing, you focused really hard on it and nothing happened or something bad happened, you probably think, well, that stuff doesn't work, that law of attraction stuff. But the thing is, whenever you fail to manifest something that you want, whenever you don't get what you want, it's because you're not matching the vibration that you're sending out into the world to what you want. It doesn't match the intention. So in the case of fighting against something, same deal. So without even realizing it, you are asking the universe to give you what you're fighting against. So don't feel the need to fight. I want you to flow. Go with the flow. And what I mean by the flow is don't just let life happen to you, but stay focused on what you want, not what you don't want. And remember that as you flow into your future, you get to decide what that looks like. And you can sort of order it up from the catalog of the universe by intending and manifesting through intentional vibration management.
All right, now this brings me to the question of the day. And the question of the day is, what would you add to my list? What are some mistakes that you might have made during the discard or that you avoided during the discard that you can share here in our comments today and maybe help another survivor do a little better? Or if you're going through the discard now, what types of ideas and thoughts do you have? What kinds of questions do you have? What could you do to make your life a little easier during the discard? Share your thoughts, share your ideas, share your experiences in the comment section below, and let's talk about it. I just want to offer a quick shout out to my amazing channel members. Thank you so much for being part of my mission to help our survivor community discover, understand, and overcome narcissistic abuse and toxic relationships. It means so much to me, and I know it means so much to everyone else too, so thank you so much. My amazing channel members include Angela, Susan, Roxanne, Debbie, Lorenzo, Life's Revival, Trisha, James, Marlene, Jen, Sarah Lee, Delilah, Boku, Paul, Janet, Pierlala, Laura, Charlie, Linda, Bible News Radio, Angel, Carrie, Beautiful Purpose, Alice, Cherie, Phoenix, Linnell, Marsha, Alda, Smith & Wesson, Miss Lisa, Martha, Freedom Lee, Mindy, Christy, and Lynn. Thank you so much. Again, I just want to say thank you so much for hitting that join button. Your support really does mean a lot to me. Thank you again. All right, that's all I've got for you right now. But as always, thank you so much for being a part of my day and a part of my life. And hey, thanks for letting me be a part of yours. It really does mean a lot to me. Now, before I go, make sure you take a look at the videos I'm leaving for you right there and right there. And while you're here, hit that subscribe button right over there so we can stay connected and continue on this healing journey together. I'll see you soon.